And welcome, friends, to this, the Thursday morning edition of the Grace Hour. Once again, broadcasting live right here from our studios. And we're located, of course, at the Greater Grace World Outreach in Baltimore, Maryland. We want to welcome you to the Thursday edition of our podcast today as we continue to develop a wonderful theme, a question, which is God enough for me? And we are asking ourselves that question here in the studio today, and trust that you are asking yourself that question. Is God enough for you? I think we know the answer, but it's great to bring up the question and to discuss it together with the body of Christ. So welcome to today's Thursday podcast. My name is Pastor Love. Joining me in the studio today is Pastor Schaller, and we will be your hosts for today's podcast. And Pastor Schaller, to start with the theme that we have this week, is God enough for me? We're going to develop this aspect of it, how he is the peace, our peace that passes all understanding. But let's stop right there and ask that question. Is God enough?
Yeah.
Which, yeah, I think every believer has to stop and ask themselves.
Yeah. Because there's a couple words. When you say enough, you think of quantity. It'd be like 1 liter. 1 liter of water, you know. But when it's a half a liter, it's not enough. So you're thinking, okay, is God enough? Is there enough quantity? But actually, it doesn't mean that as much as it has a different meaning. And it is like, maybe you could say when you're dating a girlfriend and you're asking the question, is she the one? You don't say, is she enough for me? But you could say, is she the one for me? Do I love her? Is she going to be my wife? You know, it's more not quantity, but more like a quality.
Yes.
Is do I love her? And actually, like you could say, with all my heart and my mind, my soul, yeah, do I treasure her? Is she precious to me? Do I love her? And so with God, we kind of mean it that way. Not like, is he going to show up at every problem? Is he going to be enough for me to solve my problems or enough for me? But more relationally, will he love me in that way that he will catch my heart? And that I would end up loving him with all my heart and my mind and my soul and my strength. It's kind of a different thing.
It is different.
Yeah.
And as you said, it focuses on our heart and his desire to win our hearts to himself, where we can fully and completely trust him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, in other words, actually, in the Old Testament, in the book of Exodus, we have this principle, like, to love me and have no other gods before me. So, like, if you compared me to the other gods would not be enough for you. They're not enough. And that's the funny thing about idolatry. There is a God for war, a God of peace, a God for love, or God for peace, or God for money, a God. So you can have gods, you know. But, like, do you have a God that is going to be there for you in your life, in every area of your life, you know? Or do you have idols, and you're in control of the idol, and none of those idols are really enough?
Yeah. Yeah. And it gets, as we walk with God over the course of time, we could say, yeah, he's enough when, you know, my bank account is going well. He's enough when the relationships in my life are satisfying and fulfilling. He's enough when I have good friendships and associations. But when the stakes get higher and life gets more challenging and tests and trials come, what we've learned through experience is that God is more than enough, even during those difficult days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if we can reckon on him and see him, yes, like he may not be. My money goes even worse, but I have, you know, this is the teaching that we labor in to lead people to believe that, you know, don't always interpret your life in terms of your blessings like that way, but understand who God is and know him.
Yeah, amen. So we're focusing, and today our podcast is on the peace, that peace is God. It's our relationship with God.
Mm.
It's peace becomes like the byproduct of our relationship with him, our trust in him. But Jesus said something really interesting to his disciples in John 14:27. He said, "Peace I leave you." And then he said these words, "It's my peace." So when we're talking about peace, we're not talking about, okay, the war has come to an end, or there's the calm has overtaken the storm.
Yeah.
He said this was something personal that he gives to us. It's almost like he's saying, I'm not just going to give you peace. I'm going to give you my peace.
Mm-hmm.
What a promise that we have to get his peace in the midst of our lives.
Yeah. Well, in the same text, it says, no, he said, my peace I give you. And then he said, not as the world gives.
Yes.
So, you know, the nature of God. This should be the constant meditation of the Christian, and that is the attributes of God, the nature of God. And then us relating to him, and just like the girlfriend illustration that I gave, when a woman... I mean, bear with me, but a woman is enough, meaning that she's the one that, you know, I recognize her as my partner in life and so on. So when a believer finds Christ, or Christ finds the believer, and the believer has the peace of God, and because God made a covenant with himself that we would be standing in peace all the time, Romans 5:2. We would always have peace with God. We would always have peace with God. This is incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, we'd always, it's a perfect tense for standing in his peace. We have peace with God through Jesus Christ. So, there are so many biblical references in teachings where we see that God is saying to us very much so, like you got to get realigned with me and my reality, because if you go looking for what you're really looking for is really the world's peace, the world's money, the world's career, the world's system, the way of your flesh connected, your ego, your narcissism, your self-occupation with yourself, your desires for money or clothing or food and all of these things. And that's how people live. And their lives are somehow shallow and empty.
Mm.
And so what we are pushing is like in the book of Judges, where the Jews became idolaters because that's how they were looking at life. Whereas when you come to Christ, he wants you to look at life differently and know him as the only true wise God that will enlighten your mind and help you understand that He only is worthy of all your heart, and be radical with that, and be with all your heart, put your trust in him. And we don't have any guarantees. We just know that he's the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can't say that all your heart in you and life will be perfect for you. No, we're not saying that. But with all your heart, you will know him.
Yes.
And that's the key.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that out when he said it's not the peace that the world gives you. Because the peace that the world gives us says there's a storm in my life. So God, if you exist and you're there and you care, stop the storm.
Yeah.
But the peace that he gives means that the storm could still be raging.
Yeah.
But rather than calming the storm, he calms the heart of the sailor.
Yeah.
We can have peace while the storm continues.
Yes.
That's the difference. I mean, the world with its perspective about peace is, okay, this is the way all the ducks have to line up in a row.
Yeah.
But God doesn't operate that way, does he?
No, he doesn't. And I mean, let's use another one. Popularity or reputation, for some people that means a lot. Let's say the Facebook, you know, maybe a poor analogy, but, you know, likes and dislikes and, you know, are you getting a lot of hits or, you know, like you're a popular guy or whatever. And that could mean too much to you. That could mean a lot to you, you know. But what about Christ? Christ knows God, and Christ does not care about that. Mm. Like, he did not personally seek it. He was not, like, looking for his reputation. You know, it was a bad reputation.
Yeah.
It was a bad reputation, but he knew God in that bad reputation, you know.
Wow.
So another one is maybe my career. Can you say something about that, Pastor Love, that a Christian will say, my career, I will be successful in my career. My career, that's important to me, that I would have a great career.
Sure. A lot of people attach their identity with their careers. So in order to be a successful person, they have to match that with a successful career. But that's a critical crossroads for people in their lives. What am I going to do with my life? You know, what is it that I'm going to be pursuing? Is it going to be my career? And of course, if you're a believer, you have to say, can I pursue a career and pursue God at the same time? Is it possible that that could be brought into some kind of balance? Or do I have to forsake one and choose the other? Or do I follow God with my whole heart? And that's the essence of my life. Mm-hmm. Some people would say, I don't know if that's the wisest thing to do. I remember when I made my decision to go to Bible college, there were relatives, not my immediate family, that were like, well, you know, why aren't you choosing this kind of a career? Why aren't you going in this direction? I think you would be very good doing this or doing that. But these are people that did not know my heart.
Yeah,
they didn't know what had happened to me spiritually, and my heart was like, I want to follow God. If he's God, should I not follow him wholeheartedly?
Yeah, I think it was Martin Lloyd-Jones in London who was a medical doctor, and he changed his direction with in regards to God. And basically became a, you know, world-renowned evangelical pastor. So, those are good questions. What does it mean? We don't mean that people need to go to the end of the ministry necessarily, like in that way. But we are saying that really labor, and I'm saying this to myself, like right now. Like, really labor to find God in every situation. You know, like, really make an effort to know the one true wise God.
Mm.
And it is a hard decision because our hearts can be divided.
Yes.
Remember, Ephraim had a divided heart.
Yes.
Maybe Hosea 10, verse 2.
Yeah. That happens. You know, as you were speaking, it reminds me of a story that I heard some time ago, and I hope I can relate it to our listeners as well as I can remember it. It was Charles Spurgeon, a young man. His father had ambitions for his son, and he thought that he could be a great professor, a teacher, or something. I'm not sure exactly what it was. So he set up an appointment for Charles Spurgeon to meet with somebody that was very influential and could help him in his career direction. So Spurgeon showed up at the appointed time. The problem was he showed up in a location where he thought this meeting was supposed to happen. And the other gentleman was waiting for Spurgeon in a different location. So the meeting never happened.
Yeah.
And Spurgeon left that meeting, and he said the Spirit of God spoke to him when he left that meeting in the form of a question. And it was from Jeremiah, I believe, chapter 45, where it said, "Seekest thou great things for thyself?"
Yeah.
And then the answer is, "Seek them not."
Yeah.
His father was seeking great things for his son.
Oh.
But the Spirit of God said to Charles Spurgeon, "That's not the direction, that's not the career, or that's not the path I've chosen for you." And of course, he went on to be, you know, a great preacher throughout the course of his life. But had that meeting happened, who knows where he would have ended
up.
Right. Right?
That's right.
So just the providence of God was just amazing.
Yes.
And in the case of Martin Lloyd Jones as well. And maybe even in our case. I mean,
yeah.
I've never really thought. I had a brother-in-law who asked me recently while visiting family up in New England. He asked me an interesting question, and I just got to know him because he just recently came into the family. He asked me, he said, "I have a question for you." I said, "Sure." He said, "Did you always want to be a pastor? Was this something that you know, could you have done something else?"
Yeah, yeah.
And my answer was, no, I don't think that I could have done anything else.
Uh-huh.
There was nothing in my heart that motivated me, prompted me, propelled me, moved me, anything other than the call of God.
Wow.
Yeah.
But wait, did you always want to do that?
No.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until, to be honest with you, it wasn't until, of course, I came to know Christ.
Yes.
But even then, there was no desire to be a pastor or or anything, like that.
Right.
But then Bible college, and even going to Bible college, still no intention of becoming a pastor. It just was something that over the course of time and taking the Word of God into my heart on a consistent basis, then it just became clearer and clearer. And today, I can't imagine doing anything else.
I know. I know.
I think I would be frustrated. I think I would be fearful. I think I would be empty.
Yeah.
If not for the call of God.
You know, I've never shared this before, mm-hmm. but I can now because when I was 17 years old, you know, I would say I was not saved. I don't really know. I got saved when I was 19 on October 31st. I read the prayer. God knows. But I remember one of those, by myself, I went out in the evening, late evening, in the night, you know, whenever, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, I don't know, in the back field behind our house. And I was crying out to God in a way, you know. Mm-hmm. I didn't know really what that meant, but I had a desire. And I was alone. I'm in a field. There is snow on the ground. And I'm like, in a way, I'm worshiping God. But I don't really know about that, mm-hmm. like in any training, or I was never in a Bible church. I was brought up Catholic. But I had a desire. And in that time, as I'm out there, in like maybe there was a full moon or, you know, beautiful cold evening upstate New York, and I'm there in a way because I'm seeking or searching. But two things came up in my mind about my future. One was like to be a minister, and one was to know the Bible or to be a Protestant. To be a Protestant and then also to do missions.
Mm, wow.
Yeah. Missions and maybe minister or missions and the Bible. I don't know. But I'd never been in a Protestant church. I never had read the Bible. I didn't know anything about it. But those two things, and I look back at that, and I feel like maybe God met me there, and God was putting that in my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, then some years later, I do become a believer. And also I end up in Maine in this small Bible school. And then in this church, you know, this is more than 50 years ago. And I can say, and it happened. I became, you know.
Yeah.
But what maybe the point of the story is to say, whoever's listening today, like, really believe that, you know, God is going to take care of you. Mm. And God will answer you. And God is enough for you.
Yes.
Like, you don't have to know everything. You can even be a little crazy or a little out of order or a little bit, well, a great failure or a very troubled person. But God will answer you. God cares about you. God answers prayer. God knows your heart. And if you give him your heart, he is honoring that.
Yeah. The safest place to present your heart is into God's hands. And he will. You know, as you tell that story, when you were 17 years of age, it's almost like we came into the world and God packed our bags. And we just need a little time to unpack them. And yeah. As we unpack our bags, we realize that God has given us everything we need to live this life of godliness.
Yeah.
It's all there.
Yeah.
And it's just so interesting. I often think back in my, you know, when I was younger, and there were just two things that I really were occupied with. Gathering together all of my friends and the other guys to go down to the baseball field. And I would be the guy that would say, you know, let's go. We're going to meet at this time and split up the teams and play the game. So it was like I loved to gather the other young people in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
And then I loved athletics and sports.
Yeah.
And then, you know, here I am, you know, 50 years, 60 years later, you know, spent 40 plus years working with young people in youth ministry and being involved with athletes up in New York, the NBA players in the ministry there. That's like, it was almost like a perfect fit.
Yeah.
It was almost like all I had to do was just unpack my bags.
Oh, yeah.
So you could almost say to people that are listening today, if they're tuning in, and they're wondering and they have these questions and they're maybe asking themselves, is God enough? You know, look at the longings of your heart. I mean, some of them, of course, if they're sinful and harmful, bad, you dismiss them.
Yeah,
don't
sure.
pay attention to
right,
them.
Right, right.
But if they're
right.
good,
yeah.
they're healthy, if God puts something there, take a look at it.
Yeah.
You know, unpack your bags. Just like when we go on vacation, we pack accordingly. God brought us into this world and packed our bags. Unpack them. Who knows what an amazing future is prepared for us.
Yeah, that's a good word, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, one part of it, you know, our passions or our desires, and the other part of it is I am willing to surrender everything I have for, you know, to him.
Yeah.
You know, like we are willing to surrender. It's almost like when Moses met God, and Moses had been a shepherd in Midian, in that area, in the Promised Land. And then, you know, he had left Egypt. He was born in Egypt as a Jew, and then he got in trouble and he left, and then he was a shepherd for 40 years in the wilderness, and then the Lord said, "What is in your hand?" And it was a staff. He said, "Cast it on the ground." Mm-hmm. So maybe the bag that God has packed for us is like something also we need to give back to him.
Yeah.
And cast it on the ground. Mm-hmm. And then the Lord said to Moses, "Take it up."
Yeah.
And when he took it up, in a way, it had already filtered through God, and Moses picked it up, and it was different from what it was before.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
so beautiful. Like your skill as a leader, as a young man, you know, in the neighborhood, He has also surrendered to God, and then God has used your skill for his purpose.
That's it, yeah. That's how it works, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's amazing. So we're going to talk about this peace that passes understanding. You mentioned earlier Romans chapter 5, verse 1. Through being justified by faith, we have peace with God. That's what he did. That's his work. And that's a reality for every believer. That's objective peace. God says, I did this. You didn't do it. You couldn't do it. But I've made peace with you through my cross. But then there's another kind of peace, the subjective peace, which the Bible calls the peace of God. One is peace with God. That's objective. The other is the peace of God. That's subjective peace. That's the peace that we can have in our hearts. And how do we discover that kind of peace? Especially when anxiety presses in upon us, fear, worry. We're worried about our families. We're worried about our finances. We're worried about our relationships with people. The peace of God is something that God really provides for us during those kinds of challenges.
What a loaded question.
I know.
It's very good. Yeah. The question itself is very good.
Yeah.
It probably defines 80% of our society. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so much anxiety. There's so much fear and worry. You know, like how to look at it. The Apostle Paul wrote Philippians in house arrest in Rome. He mentions money at the end of the book, thanking them for their gifts. So here he is in house arrest. He has to pay for his own, you know, whatever his needs are, whether that's food or rent or what, you know, how is he? The persecution that happens in the ministry that he was facing. So in a way, he had all kinds of reasons to worry and to be concerned about his situation. But in the epistle, he teaches in Philippians 4, be anxious for nothing. All right, so here, Pastor Love, you asked the ultimate question. I'm not going to give an answer, but I am going to say, you know, indirectly I am answering, but I am going to say, I don't think it's easy for some people. I think for some people it isn't that hard. I think, why not just read the Bible and do it, and you can find the peace of God. For other people, they are so wired to their nervousness, they're so wired to fear, they're so wired to anxiety, that they have just very bad habits. So the big question is, how could I change?
Yeah, that is indeed the question. And he does start that portion in Philippians chapter 4 by a call to rejoicing. Listen to what the Apostle Paul wrote, and as Pastor Shallow just explained it to us, this is somebody that's in prison. This is somebody that is looking at the possibility of being executed because of his faith. So he's in a prison cell, and he is not certain about what his future is going to look like, and he says these words in Philippians 4, verse 4, rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say rejoice. Now, you know, if he were sitting in the suite of a luxurious hotel, you could imagine him saying these things and how easy it would be to say that, to rejoice in the Lord. And again, I will say rejoice. But he's in a prison cell. But he says, it's almost as if he's describing the antidote for anxiety. And it starts out by saying, don't forget to rejoice in the Lord. And then he says, be anxious for nothing. And Pastor Shelley, it is true. Anxiety seems to abound in our world, in our culture today. It is everywhere. You can't deny the reality or the presence of anxiety. But here's the question. We don't have to become its prisoner. It's there. Yeah. It abounds. It's in our world.
Yeah.
But the real issue is, how can I be certain that I don't become a prisoner of anxiety?
Well, have you ever, like, maybe after a long day or a period of days or even weeks, saying, you know, I need a good laugh?
Yes.
Huh?
Yes.
I need a good laugh.
Yes.
What do you do about that? I need a good laugh. I haven't had a belly laugh in a long time. I mean, a real laugh, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's healthy.
It is.
It does good like medicine.
Yeah, I love it.
What do we do about that? I remember Pastor Stevens used to say, didn't he, like, watch the comedians sometimes?
Yes, me too, me too. I had a favorite, and it was the Marx Brothers. Groucho Marx, his brothers. You know, these were Jewish men who became, you know, comedians, movie stars, entertainers. Yeah. And they were hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it was pure. Some of it was edgy. But, I mean, I would just watch them and laugh uncontrollably.
Yeah.
And that's healthy. I mean, it just.
I think they were Russian immigrants.
Yes, you know? They were. They were. Yes,
wow,
they
isn't were. That amazing?
Yeah, incredible.
Was Karl Marx a relative?
I don't know. But these guys, Groucho,
Larry,
Chico,
no.
Groucho, no. Chico, Harpo, and Zeppo. Yeah. Those were the names. And they were gifted. I mean, the Groucho was, you know, a gifted entertainer. Chico was a gifted musician. Harpo was also he was a harp player. He could play the harp like a professional.
I remember.
Right?
Because that was in the 50s and the
60s. Yes,
right? Yes. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
I didn't know about Zeppo.
Yeah, he was the fourth brother. He seemed rather normal compared to the other three.
Now, this is what I remember reading, that Russian immigrants had come to New York. And for their own entertainment in their apartment, they would just make little skits and joke around and everything. Can you believe that? I believe that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how something great can evolve, right?
Yes, that's how it happened.
Wow.
And look at, you know, but to this day, you look back on those films that they made or the shows that they had, just absolutely hilarious. I mean, and I love it because, like you said, sometimes you just need to have a good laugh.
Well, what's this got to do with anxiety?
Well, I maybe it falls into the category of rejoicing.
Doesn't it
laughing.
Say that?
It does say
4,
that.
4,
right.
That's how it's in the
it's
Lord
the antidote.
Always.
It's the antidote for anxiety.
I mean, when you look at people that are in the world, sometimes their whole mode of operating is to have a good time.
Yes.
They just want to have a good time, you know?
Yeah.
That's like, because stress is everywhere in the world, you can worry about a lot of things. And then as Christians, we don't, you know, we have to make ourselves aware of the need to be released from our stress.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And then we can, obviously, Peter wrote in 1 Peter 5:7, you take all the cares that you have and you cast them upon the Lord.
Yeah.
Because those cares are too great for us to carry. Those burdens are too overwhelming for us to – we don't have the shoulders to carry those kinds of burdens.
Yeah, we're not made for it.
We're not.
We can't handle it.
Yeah.
Or yeah, we just need to know how to process life, right?
And the only way to process life is to be yoked up with the one who says, I can carry that for you.
Yeah, and I am the Prince of Peace.
Yes.
Yeah, I am the King of Kings. I am the answer. I'm the counselor.
Yeah. And it's not like we need to go on this journey to discover peace. All we have to do is to be filled with the Spirit, and the Spirit of God produces that peace in our lives.
Yeah.
It's not something that we have to, you know, find or look for. It's something that comes from within through the Spirit's indwelling.
Very good. Very good.
Are there any moments that you can recall in your life where you sensed that peace of God, where maybe the anxiety was, you know, trying to find its way into your heart, into your life, just, you know, to bring you to the breaking point, but then you just said, Lord, I need that peace of God. And it happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think there's many, many times when maybe you could even say, well, are you talking about a big crisis of some kind?
It could be that. It might be more, it could be even something more personal that's mm-hmm. happening in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I recall years ago, you know, having being diagnosed with a heart arrhythmia and being hospitalized and undergoing a whole series of tests, and then having a cardiologist come in and say, well, we can't quite put our finger on what it is, but we would like to put a pacemaker, you know, inside of you. I think I was in my mid-30s at the time. And I remember that was a Wednesday night that was said, and I was on the telephone listening to the church service here in Baltimore. Pastor Stevens was praying, and he prayed for me.
Okay.
And his prayer was very specific. He said, I don't believe that he needs a pacemaker, and we're just going to pray that that's not good. And I remember that night I was very anxious, needless to say, because of the procedure was going to be done first thing in the morning. And he prayed, and the body prayed. And then the peace of God flooded my soul.
Really?
I got the best night's sleep in a hospital that night that I've ever experienced in my life.
Wow.
And then the cardiologist, not one, but a team of them came in to my room in the morning, and he just looked at me, and they looked confused, and they said, you know, we don't think you're a candidate for a pacemaker.
Oh.
So we think this could be something that could be controlled by medication.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's how it happened. But I, at that point, I didn't even care. My attitude was, it doesn't matter.
Uh-huh.
You know, I got peace that God gave me. And whatever has to happen will happen, and I'm okay with it.
Wow.
Yeah. And I can remember that very vividly and thinking to myself, this is the peace of God that he imparts to us when we need it the most.
Wow. I can tell a story.
Yes, please.
Not about me, but about when I read it was Surgeon General under Ronald Reagan, Everett Koop.
Yes, the Everett Koop.
Everett Koop, yeah, that's right. And he had a son at Dartmouth, and his son studying medicine, and his son climbed mountains in the White Mountains, and his son went up, you know, for a weekend to climb, and he fell, and he was killed. And it was a family tragedy. The family's in New Jersey, and they get the word, and he was hanging up in on a mountainside of a mountain. He had passed, you know, in the tragic accident that happened, and it was very sad for the family. It's in a little book called When Mountains Move. And the family gathered together, like Dr. Koop called all the family together, and when they got the news, and they gathered together and they had a prayer. And he said that the peace of God just flooded the room, you know. And they were weeping, of course, brokenhearted, but then that peace that comes from God came and ministered to them.
Wow.
And that's a very real thing.
Yeah.
That can overcome us and all of our emotion and our confusion and our struggle and everything. And the peace of God, what an authority that is in life.
Wow.
I mean, it's a real thing. The peace of God.
Amen.
Wow.
You know, Paul started out by saying, start by rejoicing. And don't be anxious about everything, but take everything to God by prayer and supplication. And then he said this too. He said, and don't forget the gratitude. Don't forget to be thankful. I love that part of it.
Yeah.
Because even in the midst of anxiety that's pressing in upon you, you know, find something that you can be grateful for, to be thankful for. And then he said, once you've done that, you've made your requests be known unto God, expect the peace of God that passes all understanding. What a promise from God.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
A promise that we need now, today, in our world, more than ever before. Today is the day we lost Charlie Kirk a year ago. Tomorrow is the day that we remember the events of September 11th, 25 years ago. Our world has completely changed since that event 25 mm-hmm. years ago. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that remains the same is the peace of God still has a way of guarding, keeping our hearts and minds.
Amen.
Amen. Well, we're out of time, friends, but thanks so much for joining us today. So many of you have weighed in and shared your comments today, from Tennessee to the Ukraine and greater Baltimore area and around the world. We appreciate it so much. And we'll be back tomorrow for the Friday edition of the Grace Hour. We'll wrap up this theme asking the question, is God enough for us? And I think we all know the answer. He is, has been, and he always will be. Thanks for joining us, friends, and we'll be back tomorrow at the same time. Until then, may God bless you.